hppodcraft.com.
The Colossus. Chapter 1, The Flight of the Necromancer. Southern France, 1281. In the medieval city of Vionne, a great cathedral gleams in the boiling dusk. From a neighboring hill, a tall, twisted mansion's shadow stretches unnaturally over the building. We descend into the overgrown gardens behind the evil manor house, where Mr. and Mrs. Daring, thieves, lurk through the ornate shrubbery.
Shh! Don't shush me!
Bats screech out of the manor belfry, flapping into the sky.
I thought you said there was no one here.
No, I said I heard that the necromancer Nathair and his 10 devil-given pupils had departed suddenly and secretly, perhaps leaving behind furniture of satanic luxury and strangeness. I didn't say anything about bats.
Shh! Let's have a peek inside.
Don't shush me.
The two thieves tiptoe toward a broken stained glass window. From inside, we see them peering through the glass. Their eyes go wide. They burst into the crowded city tavern.
It's empty!
We cut to the tavern a few rounds later. Locals surround the two as they hold court from a table, an ornate wooden chandelier dangling above the room.
No furniture, no books, not even a spoon of satanic strangeness.
All gone! Doubtless to the same fiery born as Nathair and his 10 devil-given pupils.
An angry dad with bright red hair speaks up from the bar.
Hey, one of them devil-given pupils is my son, and I'm not the only one who have lost a good boy to the unholy tutelage of Nathair. He may have gone astray, but the Lord tells us to forgive.
Looks at bartender.
People? Debts? All sorts of things.
The bartender frowns. A naysayer chimes in.
Do you really trust these two known thieves? It is patently impossible that Nathair and his 10 apprentices, with several cartloads of household belongings, could have passed the ever-guarded city gates in any legitimate manner without the knowledge of the custodians.
A custodian pounds the bar next to him, drunk.
And I saw nothing.
A cleric stands up from a table.
You who saw nothing are lucky. The thieves are correct. The house is empty. And I personally witnessed the flight of the necromancer.
We flash back to blue moonlit skies over Nathair's mansion.
A legion of bat-winged assistants carried them away bodily. A flight of man-like shapes upon the blotted stars, together with others that were not men.
Ebony, winged creatures ascend from the tower, clutching the human figures of Nathair's pupils. The cleric stands on a street outside of the Vion Cathedral, looking up in fear as the creatures caper over the rooftops, launching from the city walls toward an amorphous shape stretching from the stars to meet them.
I heard the wailing cries of the hellbound crew as they passed in an evil cloud over the roofs and city walls.
The cleric crosses himself, then bends down to pick up the small dog he'd been walking, hustling away. Back at the tavern...
This was about, 2 weeks ago. Pure fantasy! There are bats that fly from that belfry nightly. There is no magic in it.
It's true! I saw them tonight!
An apothecary emerges from the bathroom, followed by a peasant who wipes powder from his nose.
Somebody might have already said this, but Nathair and his pupils probably transported themselves from Vion through their own diabolic arts to some unfrequented fastness where he can die in peace.
Die? Nathair? Why is Fiend begotten, like the fabled Merlin, his father being no less a personage than Alastor, demon of revenge, and his mother a deformed and dwarfish sorceress? From the former, he takes his spitefulness, from the latter, his squat, puny physique.
Stop your mouth, naysayer!
Nay!
Nathair is powerful, but he has long been in feeble health. This he has kept hidden, but much is known to the apothecary. One of his pupils frequented my shop, procuring different healing powders, as well as the first two illustrated volumes of the Apothecary Mysteries. I should mention I am working on the third. Oh. Now I see. You were just feigning interest in my work while I measured out your powders.
Get on with it!
See? Witness my ability to create suspense! He wants to hear more. Anyway, this pupil of Nathair's, an ugly boy with bright red hair.
Hey!
We see the tower of the mansion open up against the night sky, and a giant brass orb of rotating rings and lenses emerges.
He told me that Nathair had lately cast his own horoscope for the first time in 50-odd years.
The figure of Nathair walks out onto a platform within the astronomical wonder, staring up into the stars.
He had read therein an impending conjunction of disastrous planets, signifying early death.
Cosmic explosions reflect in Nathair's eyes.
He hopes to die in such peace and serenity as might be enjoyed by one who stands between the flames of the auto de fe and those of Abaddon.
Back at the tavern, the apothecary does indeed command the attention of the room.
For do not doubt, his departure has been prompted by fear of ecclesiastical thumbscrews and the stake. Nathair has incurred the reprobation of the church countless times, and their inquisitory zeal is unmatched this year. They're really having a good one. Other than Nathair, there are no sorcerers of any repute left unexecuted in all of Averon.
Now wait just a minute.
An elderly man, the enchanter, steps out from the shadows in beat-up old wizard robes.
He said, of any repute, enchanter.
Nathair has retired from the public view somehow, yes. But merely so that he might commune without interruption with various coadjutive demons, and thus might weave unmolested the black spells of a supreme and lycanthropic malice. He didn't just move away or anything. He's still around. And these spells will in due time be visited upon Vion and perhaps upon the entire region of Averon, and will no doubt take the form of a fearsome pestilence or a wholesale invulsuation or a realm-wide incursion of succubi and incubi.
Werewolves or sex demons? Here we go again. It's always one or the other. But you never see any werewolves or sex demons in town. Do you?
I drove the werewolves out of Vion in my youth and dealt with the sex demons at great personal cost, boy. Don't underestimate my power.
The naysayer stands.
You know, I've listened to everybody spew nonsense night after night in here, but nothing is worse than boasting about your old haunted orgies, you drunk.
The naysayer pulls a dagger from his belt.
Let's start dealing in facts. If you're such a powerful wizard, enchanter, then stop this dagger!
He makes to throw the blade when, crack, the chandelier animates and lunges down from the ceiling, grasping the naysayer like the talons of a claw, lifting him into the air. The crowd gasps as his knife clatters to the ground.
What the hell? Oh, God, run!
Enchanter!
Gaspar Dunord, a handsome young sorcerer, steps out of the shadows, clutching his hand in the air.
I was going to let you take credit for this, you old fool.
He opens his hand, and the chandelier draws back to the ceiling, releasing the naysayer, who crashes to the ground.
If Nathair is gone, it is good. Why indulge in somber gossip and lurid speculation?
Gaspar drains his cup and places it on the table. He shakes a pouch from his belt over his palm. A few beans and one small coin fall out. He glances up at the bartender, who waves him off. Gaspar leans down and grabs the naysayer's dagger, tucking it into his belt and nodding at the enchanter. As he exits, we see a young girl's eyes watching through a window. Outside of the tavern, the girl, Aggie, approaches Gaspar as he steps out.
That was quite something, sir. Magical.
Gaspar looks her over suspiciously, then relaxes.
You know, I thought so too. Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome. I haven't seen you around here before. Visiting?
No, I live at the edge of town. This was a rare luxury for a poor student. A
lot of lines on your face for a student.
Have a good night.
Wait! You're in luck! Because tonight only, I'm offering a student discount.
She pulls a long rope. A metallic grinding sound catches Gaspar's attention. From the shadow of the tavern, a clockwork reanimated horse, Magnifique, lurches out into the open, a wooden cart hitched to it. It marches toward them, clicking rhythmically.
What is that?
Magnifique. He's my horse. Or was. He died.
What did you do to it?
My dad and I took what was left and got it running again. It's a clockwork thing now.
It actually smells nice. Like leather. Huh. Well, you're very clever. But I'm very poor.
It's free. That's the discount.
Gestures to the tavern.
If they see you do it, they might try it. I don't want to go into the family business, okay?
We cut to a long, dark, dirt road. Aggie steers Magnifique from the cart, Gaspar sitting behind her, the horse chugging and whirring along. Gaspar whistles softly, and a will-o'-the-wisp appears on the roadside in the distance, lighting it in ethereal blue, dissolving before they meet it.
I wish I had a sorcerer with me all the time. It gets awful dark when there's no moon. Although there's a full one coming, and that can be just as bad.
Gaspar whistles again. Another wisp appears down the path.
They're only wisps. In the old days, people stumbled upon the right whistle and thought they were summoning light from the very air. But now we know that it's only a mating call that the wisps respond to.
Oh. They're some kind of animal?
No, they're ghosts. But it's not magical light or anything silly like that. Only common ghosts.
So you are a scientist?
I am.
You're Gaspard, the hermit who wastes all his good looks studying. My sisters talk about you. They say you're a student of Nathair the Necromancer.
I was. Let's not revive the memory. Nathair imparted much rare and peculiar knowledge to me, but I chose to withdraw from the household after learning the enormities that would attend my further initiation.
He does things with dead bodies.
I prefer not to talk about it. He's been tolerated because he assists in furthering this town's dubious affairs. But when he first arrived, he was stoned in public for his brooded necromancies and permanently lamed by a well-directed cobble. He never forgave that injury. They mock him, but he possesses remarkable power. A mesmeric persuasion. His vanishment is a providential riddance.
I stuffed this horse and made it run again. Does that make me a necromancer?
No. You've made a clockwork, and a quite good one. Nathair would rend the horse's spirit from its peaceful grave, enslave it, make it do the work of your gears. His power comes from the breaking of things.
Oh, no. It's better to fix things.
Too many men like Nathair hoard knowledge and use it to their own selfish ends. I endeavor to create a great volume of knowledge, the summation of many lifetimes' work, so that people can be free of destructive creatures like him.
That's quite noble, to sacrifice your youth and society for others.
Sweet child, don't be so naive. Once I'm done, I'll use my magical knowledge to travel to the far future, a time and place much less disgusting, and reap the dividends of my nascent science. These idiots here are on their own.
What does a ghost mate with?
Cut to a small house built against a craggy tree. Gaspar waves to Aggie as she steers her horse away.
Bye, Aggie. Remember that information I gave you.
Bye.
As she disappears into the night, he hears a footfall up the path, a clanking and stumbling. He turns and whistles. A wisp appears, illuminating a zombie knight clad in armor but with a giant split in his shoulder, shambling across the road. The thing hisses at him from half a face. Gaspar draws his dagger, but it turns away and lurches off as the light fades. Cut to Gaspar's attic. The large room is sparsely furnished, but crammed with books, lab equipment, and curious knickknacks. An oblong mirror, framed with an arabesque of golden vipers, rests on a table. Gaspar seats himself in front of the mirror.
Show me the whereabouts of Nathair.
The reflection of his face dissolves into a vision. Wizards conjuring over a giant fuming cauldron. The shape of a shadowy demon grasping a man's writhing body. Two huge stone vats, steaming, bubbling, about to tip over. A cloud passes across the mirror, and then a flash. Gaspar shields his eyes. The mirror dulls.
Istarel.
Istarel appears in the mirror, a beautiful young creator of magical artifacts.
This clouding can mean only one thing. Nether knows himself watched and has put forth a counterspell that renders my clairvoyant mirror useless.
Were you watching me, Istarel?
No. You called me.
But how did you know what I wanted?
Nether has been clouding a lot of mirrors, Gaspard, but I'm not even sure who this is. Who is this? I have to go.
Another flash, and the mirror goes dark.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning into our virtual stage reading of The Colossus, Chapter 1, The Flight of the Necromancer. Chapter 2, The Gathering of the Dead, will be available for our Patreon cultists on the 30th of this month. There are 8 chapters in all for this feature presentation, and they will be out twice a month for those backers until it's done. If you are not a podcast supporter or can't subscribe, fear not. The entire feature-length presentation will be available for free this Halloween season. The Colossus has been brought to you by HPPodcraft.com, Strange Studies of Strange Stories, with Chris Lackey and Chad Pfeiffer. And it is based on the short story The Colossus of Elorn by Clark Ashton Smith, which we covered earlier this year on the show. The Colossus was written, directed, and scored by Chad Pfeiffer, with additional much-needed audio production by Eric Peabody of Viking Guitar Productions. The track you are hearing right now from this episode is Obliterator by Viking Guitar Productions. You can actually go watch Eric rock that out on YouTube and pick it up on Bandcamp. We'll link out in the show notes. Let me tell you about our marvelous cast. The Colossus stars Andrew Lehman as the movie, Megan Austin Oberly as Mrs. Daring, Scott McDonald as Mr. Daring, Chris Lackey as the angry dad, Joshua Bentley as the naysayer, Levi Nunez as the custodian, Bill Sebastian as the cleric, Hal Lublin as the apothecary, Chad Pfeiffer as the enchanter and Gaspar, Heather Klinke as Aggie, and Jamie Andrews as Istarel. No horses or knights were harmed in the making of this production. HBPodcast.com.